Spotlight.
This is Akashwani. In the program Spotlight, now we bring you a discussion on the commencement of Donald Trump's tenure as the 47th U.S. president. The participants are Professor Swarn Singh, international relations expert, and Deeksha Saxena, Akashwani correspondent.
All eyes were on the swearing-in ceremony of the oldest person in the history of the United States as her president. Donald Trump was sworn in as the 47th U.S. president on January 20th. The world watches as Donald Trump takes over the center stage. Greetings poured in from the world leaders. Prime Minister Narendra Modi congratulated Donald Trump on his inauguration. President Trump has ushered major policy changes. Let's listen in to what he had to say at his inauguration.
The inflation crisis was caused by massive overspending and escalating energy prices, and that is why today I will also declare a national energy emergency. We will drill, baby, drill. America will be a manufacturing nation once again. And we have something that no other manufacturing nation will ever have, the largest amount of oil and gas of any country on earth, and we are going to use it. We will bring prices down, fill our strategic reserves up again, right to the top, and export American energy all over the world.
To discuss more on the U.S. presidential elections, we have with us Professor Swaran Singh. Professor Singh, welcome to Spotlight program.
Thank you, Deeksha, for having me on your program.
Professor Singh, the election campaign of the United States saw many events which are for the history books. He survived two assassination attempts. We also saw Joe Biden dropping out just months before the election day. Could you tell us the reasons which led to the victory of Donald Trump in the elections?
I think in many ways, at least in initial stages, it was primarily because President Joe Biden was seen as perhaps too old, too infirm to be a candidate against Donald Trump. And the fact that he finally decided far too late in July, the next candidate, Kamala Harris, did not get much time to prepare and make her best effort. This could be seen partly the reason why Democratic Party couldn't present a very strong competition. But I think it's also partly because, as everybody in media says, Donald Trump has a very dedicated cadre of supporters who are willing to not move away from Donald Trump support. And in addition to that, I suppose his close relationship with Elon Musk and use of social media, particularly X, also contributed. But in the end, the fact that he had popular vote plus electoral college vote, and Republicans now control, even with light and small margin, both houses of U.S. Congress, shows that American people really wanted him to become the president.
Professor Singh, Mr. Trump signed a number of executive orders on the first day of his presidentship. First of all, I would like you to explain us what an executive order is.
Executive orders are issued by president when there is not time enough to go through the normal procedure of proposing and adopting legislation through the legislature, which is U.S. Congress, the House of Representatives and Senate. And in situations where president thinks that there is need for urgent action, executive orders are issued. And executive orders are later, of course, endorsed by the U.S. Congress in due course of time.
Coming on to the executive orders signed, how do you see the order on recognition of only two genders and the end to automatic citizenship? What impact will it have on millions and millions of people fighting for the LGBTQ plus rights? And also, how will the end to automatic citizenship order impact non-Americans?
And this is in the same vein of regressive and conservative approach that President Donald Trump has, whether it is on climate change, whether it is on gender rights, gender mainstreaming, or it is on several other issues that we can talk about. It's a regressive measure to go back to recognizing only two genders, whereas much of the world over several decades now has come upon recognizing, endorsing, encouraging several other identities that people wish to claim for themselves. So it's a regressive kind of executive order. Likewise, the order on citizenship is also regressive because it is also flawed, actually, because the Constitution of United States says that citizenship is conferred upon people by birth. And unless we make an amendment in the Constitution, we cannot just take away rights of people who are born in United States, particularly of parents who are non-permanent residents in United States. So it's a kind of a puzzle for me how this executive order could be issued, because it contravenes the provisions of U.S. Constitution itself.
Continuing with the executive orders, the other executive orders signed include withdrawal from Paris Climate Agreement and withdrawal from the WHO. In your opinion, how is it going to impact not just the United States, but all the other countries in the globe?
Very simple, because even during his first term, he had walked out of Paris Climate Change Agreement and threatened to walk out of World Health Organization. Simply because United States is world's largest economy, inordinately large economy of $27-28 trillion. It consumes more, it produces more, it is a hub of high technology, it is a great military power and so on. So in terms of its contributions, whether it is to mitigating and addressing climate crisis, or it is financial contributions to international arrangements like World Health Organization, if it is walking away from these arrangements, it definitely will weaken those international arrangements to a great extent. Or shall we say, it will create opportunities for other nations to step in, particularly, let's say, emerging economies. India could be one, which will have to stand up and take a greater responsibility to deal with those global challenges. So again, it's part of that regressive and conservative approach to policy making, which is reflective in these also.
You spoke about India emerging as a new global power. I would want your opinion on the new relationship which the United States and India will set up in Donald Trump's second tenure.
In view of election speeches and now with a whole blitzkrieg of executive orders, there is enormous anxiety around the world as to how partner nations, adversary nations, competitors will have to deal with President Donald Trump. There's an anxiety on that subject. And yes, there are concerns in India. How would India manage relationship in the coming 4 years? Let me quickly look at three levels of how India relates to United States. First of all, at the very apex of national leadership, you notice that Indian foreign minister has been to US thrice in last 6 months, twice in just last 4 weeks. And he had detailed meetings with the outgoing establishment of President Joe Biden, and also held meetings with the coming leadership of President Donald Trump. So there is a certain amount of, if not bonhomie, at least comfort level at personal level. And we also notice the relationship of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi with the President Donald Trump. They share very warm relationship. Hopefully that will also continue in the second term of President Donald Trump. Second is the relationship in terms of trade and investment. In terms of investment, the major tech perennials or tech billionaires, Elon Musk, very visible, very influential today, they have interest in India. They want to make sure India's market is accessible to them. And indeed, President Trump himself has investments in India. There are 4 properties that he already has in Pune, Mumbai, Gurgaon, and one more place, Jaipur, I think. And there are 6 new projects of President Donald Trump himself in India. So in terms of investments, they look at India as a land of opportunity in that sense. But of course, President Trump is also very, very, let's say, uncomfortable with trade deficits. And there is about $40 billion of trade deficit with India. And he will have to see that India opens up its market for American exports, or reverse, raise tariffs to reduce India's exports to United States. That could be an issue happening possibly. So at second level also, there are challenges but also opportunities. And third level, which the outgoing ambassador of United States has been underlining, the strongest pillar of India-US relations is Indian diaspora, which is very influential today in politics, in corporate sector, in educational institutions, in research and think tanks. And they will continue to be very strong pillar between India and United States as well. So I think India will have its own unique advantages of being a technology hub, which is producing and sort of using technology at a very large scale, billion plus people, and producing technologies at a very low cost level. So if United States has now to focus on domestic production and also make it competitive at global level, they could try to explore certain partnerships with India, even in manufacturing sector. India is focusing on Make in India also. So I think there is going to be certain challenges, but also at the same time, a lot more opportunities to work with the United States.
You spoke about opportunities here. I would like to draw your attention to his address. During his address, the president declared a national energy policy to boost U.S. oil and gas production and lower the prices. How is it going to impact India, in your opinion?
I think at the global level, the fact that President Trump thinks the whole debate on climate crisis is nothing but a hoax and is taking initiatives of removing incentives on e-vehicles, opening up all the regulatory limitations on fossil fuel production, and that will impact how climate crises are addressed. So at that level, since India is one country which is very concerned and is trying to contribute to transition to green energy, and that could be an issue of discomfort between two sides, I understand. But at the same time, India has exponentially growing demand for energy. So even when we are moving away from fossil fuels, we still have large amounts of consumption of fossil fuels. And remember, we are inordinately 80 to 90% dependent on importing gas and oil. So in that sense, United States may look at India as a destination to export gas and oil. India may choose to buy oil and gas from United States. That could be the positive side of the relationship. But how the policy level kind of understanding will grow on this issue of climate crisis would be a challenge where we'll have to work together very carefully.
And the fact is that today India is one of the front runners when it comes to climate action, and it is one of the top performing nations. Professor Singh, I am also inquisitive to know, three Indian entities were removed from the US restrictions list, paving way for civil nuclear partnership between India and the American firms. And this happened before Jake Sullivan's visit to India. This was in the Biden regime. Do you feel that the Biden regime, whatever the Biden regime did, paved way for this? Will the Trump regime carry forward it?
There is no doubt that enormous leapfrog happened in defense and strategy cooperation between India and the United States during the first term of President Donald Trump. So strategic defense cooperation should grow between two nations during the second term of President Donald Trump. But he's also, as we all know, if I can use the word, very allergic to all the last minute decisions that President Joe Biden made before demitting office. So in that sense, he's also revoking all executive actions that President Joe Biden took. In that sense, there could be something to worry about. But there are larger issues of when we talk about these four entities, primarily space and nuclear cooperation related. And the story goes back to July of 2005, when a joint statement for moving forward in nuclear cooperation was signed in United States. And gradually we have moved forward in various directions since then. I mean, United States endorses India's credentials as a nuclear technology country, it opens many doors with several other countries also. So we have kind of incurred benefits from that friendship with the United States.
Due to paucity of time, Professor Singh, we'll have to conclude this discussion here. Thank you so much for sparing your valuable time and throwing light on all the aspects of Trump 2.0.
Thank you, Diksha.
You were listening to a discussion on the commencement of Donald Trump's tenure as the 47th U.S. president. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani.
Spotlight.